Mini episode 169 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by TV Howl, your home on the web for coverage of today's television scene and a look at the history of the medium as covered by big-time TV critic Adam Buckman. Follow them on the web at tvhowl.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Okay, folks, mini episode number 169. Rick Morris and Kyle Ross continuing to plow through. This is 3B now on the Kyle Ross History of SummerSlam anthology. We're doing 1998 to 2002 as part 3. 3B specifically is 2000, 2001, 2002. And we've
the reason for the split is you had the
Russo years?
Yeah, I mean, let's not give Vince Russo too much credit, but I think it made a nice line of demarcation.
Yeah,
don't you?
I thought so.
Along with the change of millennium.
Yeah, no, that was your choice. That was a good choice.
Thank you.
You talked about here, and it's funny because this was significantly better than the 89 SummerSlam main event. But we talked about previously that was an amalgam of Hot Summer Program with Zeus. And then also a little bit of a holdover of Hogan and Savage. This three-way match that was the main event at SummerSlam, the continuation of the pretty much year-long Rock Triple H program, which had restarted in the fall of 99, their rivalry. And yet a new guy gets put into the mix here. It's a three-way dance as Kurt Angle enters the world title picture here.
Second year in a row, a triple threat main event SummerSlam.
That's true. They hadn't really done that much previously. And Another noteworthy thing also, too, 98-99, we did these together. It was Steve Austin on top both of those years in world title programs. That is the big point of difference.
That's another
from
big
during,
point, yeah.
Yeah,
because he was hurt here. Obviously, no, you know, they had taken,
yeah.
This was the big injury when
right.
He was gone for a
but,
year.
But 93 to 97, there was no continuity. Even 92, if we go back to the last part of the first one that we did here, you have to go back to the Hogan years to see a guy who you really expected to see on top year after year. As hot as The Rock was, it could have been The Rock in there instead of Austin anyways, but Austin would have had a good chance for a three-peat on top at SummerSlam, or
maybe
this might have been a four-way match had he been healthy.
Well, let's set this match up, shall
yeah.
we? Going back to 99, we obviously took a little bit of umbrage with the forced push of Triple H initially.
Yes.
Fun little thing happened along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, I call it a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Crazy thing called love.
Yeah, they wanted him to get over, and he did. But it wasn't... The big thing was the angle with Stephanie,
mm-hmm.
where Stephanie goes with them. DX becomes his flunkies. They do the McMahon-Helmsley regime, I believe was the name they were
or
using
the
at the time.
Or the fat
I can't remember. But and he did get over.
Yeah.
But we talk about that there were a lot of things in the classic idea sense in this industry that you do. And because Triple H was involved and it benefited him, they didn't do it. I thought Austin Big Show, and again, Big Show didn't do himself any favors. He was pretty lazy.
Mm-hmm.
But I would have thought that would have been your main event of SummerSlam 99.
Yep.
Your big money match, your big free agent signing against your very ultra-hot world champion. I then thought Jericho, coming off a phenomenal debut, right at the beginning of August before SummerSlam 99, should have been the next heel line.
Break the walls down!
But they didn't do that. They didn't go with either of those guys. They went with Triple H,
mm-hmm.
and he did get over eventually
yeah.
after kind of a failed first title run, but he gets the belt back.
His first push made the George Gulas push in Tennessee in the 70s look organic.
Okay. There we go. Very nice. How long ago did you think of that? On the
couple
fly,
minutes ago.
That? Okay, there
couple
we go.
Minutes ago, yeah.
But he did get over, and here's the thing, too. Everything built from the fall, basically when Austin was hurt and out of the picture.
Yeah.
And even before then, really, it was very clear that The Rock was had gotten to his level
yes.
in 99. And he was the next, he deserved at least a nice run as a babyface world champion.
Yes.
And so the very logical thing to do is have him win the title from Triple H at WrestleMania 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Well, again, that doesn't benefit Triple H, does it now? And
no,
they didn't
it doesn't.
Do it. Now, you talk about, okay, the idea, it's a very simplistic idea of having a babyface walk out of WrestleMania every year as world champion. It had gotten old. That was a time period where they were really big on trying different things and going off of, going against the grid. Now, it's interesting that today they many times want to close WrestleMania on a positive note, but mm-hmm. whatever. They didn't. They did a four-way dance. They didn't even do the one-on-one matchup. They did a four-way that involved Mick Foley, who shouldn't have been in there because he had lost a retirement match, and the Big Show, who they were just desperate at that point to get any return on investment from.
It was that was one of the worst main events that they've ever had at WrestleMania.
Yeah, I would say with the exception of like Hogan Sid at WrestleMania 8, it's down there, baby.
But you know, at least the Hogan Sid one had good booking to it. The booking on that one.
Traditional
booking, yeah. Yes.
That was just a masturbatory reason to get all
the
McMahons
yes.
involved.
Yes, McMahon Fest 2000.
Okay. So anyway, Triple H, what's funny is by the time you roll on, let's bring it full circle here, Ricky. Mm-hmm. Work with me.
Okay.
SummerSlam 2000. Triple H is still firmly entrenched near the top.
Yep.
Rock is the champion. He wins it. It's very interesting, too. Listen to this. Talk about something they would never allow to even allow to happen. Now, 2000, Backlash as a pay-per-view in mm-hmm. April destroys WrestleMania. That's one of the best non-major five pay-per-views ever, Backlash 2000.
Well, it had a lot of the blow-offs. WrestleMania didn't settle in a lot of
things. No, and WrestleMania had no one-on-one matches. You're right. And it also had a very good underrated Dean Malenko, Scotty Tuhati match on Backlash 2000, which I've always enjoyed. But
there's a real clash of charisma, is it not?
Yes, it was. Yeah, didn't do well at the box office. I enjoyed it, though. Thank you very much. But Rock does win the title there, and he holds the title through the summer here. And,
mm-hmm.
But you mentioned Kurt Angle. Angle, it was very clear, again, here's what's interesting about this Triple H and this heel spot, which he held on to so firmly from 99 to 05. I mean, he wanted to, he, as long as he was active on the roster, not injured, he was the lead heel in this company.
Yep.
Once again, look to me, you know, like you said, okay, maybe Big Show didn't deserve it initially in the summer of 99. Maybe Jericho wasn't ready. I know Jericho has kind of towed the company line in some videos, and some videos. Jesus, how old do I sound?
DVDs
and some books saying, you know, I wasn't maybe ready. You know, he talked about how hard McMahon wasn't. He also referenced some of the politics of Triple H.
Yep.
Maybe Jericho wasn't ready. But it sure seemed to me that Kurt Angle was ready pretty early on. I mean, he was not yet, in the summer of 2000, the great worker he would become. That kind of started in 2001. He was a good worker, an above-average worker. He's a very good athlete, obviously, won an Olympic gold medal.
Right.
But it was very clear from a character perspective, he was ascending to that lead heel role. And, in fact, he winds up winning the world title after this show from The Rock.
Yeah, and again, his amateur background, he leveraged perfectly quickly become an excellent worker.
He's
just about the gold standard for guys that came into the business. Danny Hodge back in the day, blah, blah, blah. Okay, but in the last 10 to 20 years, I can't think of anybody that came in with that background that did any better, and I think I might even include Brock Lesnar in that. And the Smarks are going to be burying me on message boards for having said that.
I think Lesnar.
Kurt Angle's a whipping boy.
Yeah, I think Lesnar did a little better. But here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
They never did, when you roll into SummerSlam 2000,
mm-hmm.
they did the big angle here. We talk about, okay, what's your big summer angle? What are you going to promote? It was funny. Rock was sort of the third wheel in this match, despite being the world champion and being The Rock.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a really over babyface world champion, but the main storyline of the summer of 2000, which, by the way, we need to reference the hottest period in the history of this company.
Yeah.
Okay.
2000
Paul
was
Belvedere, Hulk Hogan love. This, okay. this period drew way more money than anything that ever happened in the 80s.
Belfie's throwing something in his laptop as he listens to this.
Okay.
But I agree with you.
It's a fact. It's not my preference. Look at the revenues.
2000 is the business pinnacle. Sorry, Paul, if you disagree.
This is what allowed them to go public.
Yeah, it was. It was.
But The Rock's kind of have to, and they did this wonderful love triangle story. So Triple H, still a heel, And he gets involved with Kurt Angle, also a heel. So you've got a heel. This is the most over heel versus heel storyline they ever had. And Stephanie kind of made these references, oh, Kurt's kind of cute, and it kind of irritated Triple H. And a funny little thing happened where I'm looking at I remember this very vividly at the time. I'm sure you thought the same thing because almost everyone did.
Yeah.
Okay, the logical move here is to have Stephanie turn on Triple H and go with Angle and have Angle be the new lead dog on the heel side as champion. Again, to put my final stamp, and I'll let you speak, that doesn't benefit Triple H, so they don't do the natural decision. And that's what, again, a lot of people have problems, some very legitimate problems with Triple H. And the way this was handled.
Yeah.
Because you could look, they'll say, oh, Kurt Angle beat The Rock. He was the world champion for several months. Yeah, but, you know, him and Jericho always said, you know, yeah, we got runs as world champion, but we never felt like the guy.
Well, no, that's a very good point. What I was going to say about that was Triple H was really kind of getting over as a tweener at that point. And here's the thing. Stephanie's character throughout this thing, and what really made it a swerve at the end, and this was a swerve although he was gone in the Russo sense because it didn't make sense, her character was consistently, from the point of her turn in December of 99, completely and fundamentally unlikable. She should have been with the douche Kurt Angle.
Yes.
I mean, that was the pairing right there. But by the same token,
and Triple H could have had a wonder. People would have gotten really like they would have with Test coming back to avenge Triple. See, again, it's interesting with your idea for Test.
Yeah.
You know, okay, Test is avenging this storyline. What, you know, what would happen? I don't know how you get Angle involved there or whatever, but we're getting way off the path because too much fantasy booking alert. Look out. But Triple H, the logical idea was that he would turn babyface after a massive heel run.
Right.
And they didn't do it.
Well, here's the funny thing.
And this was a weird executed match because The Rock retains here. And remember, Angle got hurt legit in this match.
Yeah.
They did the angle early where he got pedigreed and the table broke wrong. And he took it on his noggin, man.
He did.
So he was out most of the match. And The Rock, he did come back, but the Rock just goes over kind of clean, which was kind of odd, I guess.
Particularly since The Rock was going to be getting into a feud with Angle and going back and forth in the fall and winter with the belt.
Yeah, but it was never a real feud. It didn't seem
to be. No,
like, what was the I mean, I guess the issue was the belt, which is as fine as issue as any, but
the only issue was the belt, actually.
Who did The Rock even wrestle the September? They did like a four-way at that, remember?
Yeah, they did.
It was like Benoit, Undertaker, and Kane or something like that.
Something like that.
And Unforgiven 99?
The thing that's interesting is Triple H, at that point in time, I mean, he was less than a year into his on and off screen relationship with Stephanie McMahon.
And he very legitimately didn't want to give that. He knew what his meal ticket was. He knew where his bread was buttered. Let's be honest. Here's a spade a spade.
Here's
a
funny thing. They didn't get married off screen until like the fall of 03. But there's a world of difference between Triple H's level of security in the summer of 2000 and in early 02 when they did do everything you're talking about. He becomes a massive face. He splits with Stephanie.
And
she goes with Jericho. The whole thing of he was terrified of being Kevin Sullivan booking his own divorce.
No, but Kurt was married. I guess wrestling is wrestling, but I mean,
But he proved in early 02.
I mean, you're not going to pass around the boss's daughter in the locker room.
Well, it's very interesting, too, that the one thing that could have added a little bit more heat to that main event at SummerSlam, or I'm sorry, at WrestleMania 18, is if they had gone in some kind of romantic direction with Stephanie and Jericho just to stick it to Triple H. Very interesting what would be a traditional part of a wrestling storyline that they didn't go with out of deference to Triple H. So even then, they didn't do everything they could to add heat to it, Kyle Ross.
And here's the thing, if you remember,
yeah,
and I know you do,
yeah,
that Stephanie Jericho thing never worked.
Not at all.
People bought Stephanie and Angle, and I think kind of just wanted to see it because you're right, Stephanie's character
was
so fundamentally unlikely. It would have worked perfectly.
Yeah.
You know, to me, through all the different fantasy booking combinations she could have come up with, the very obvious to me, I don't know to you or to any of the listeners, you have Stephanie particularly, and it even worked with the Angle injury because he was out of the match.
Yeah.
Remember, here's the thing. That's right. You know what was funny?
Mm-hmm.
they had switched the belt too much. Remember, like, Rock and Triple H should actually trade it. Rock wins at Backlash, but then he loses it back the next month in that Iron Man.
In the Iron Man.
And then he wins it, but not from him.
By pinning Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
In the infamous Grapefruits match.
Yeah, that's right. Now.
Yeah. It was a six-man.
Yeah, it was. Undertaker and Kane were. Yeah. Now, look, we talked about what a great period this was, and how, and you know, in-ring WWE had never been better,
right.
I could argue, but.
The seeds of destruction were soon being sown.
Yeah, but to me, the very obvious storyline for SummerSlam 2000 is Stephanie turns, goes with Angle, and Angle wins the belt. But you know, we talk about the seeds being sown. Let's back up a month to Fully Loaded 2000, a pay-per-view that's very good in-ring, creatively started to do some damage in a you know, a small friend of mine on a show called SNS I once was on.
Yeah.
Have ripped this pay-per-view, Fully Loaded 2000 in the past, did great numbers for a not kind of a throwaway show. You had three big matches on the show, Rock versus Benoit, Triple H versus Jericho, Last Man Standing. It's a wonderful match, by the way. Undertaker, Kurt Angle. All three matches, an established guy against a guy who had sort of really been starting to kind of sow his oats during the last 6 months or so that come in, you know, the Radicals had come in Benoit, Guerrero company had come in January. Every one of those matches, the established guy went over. And that, I didn't think because they had been switching the title, and I disagreed with my little friend on SNS about Rock Benoit. I actually thought Rock should have gone over because they had been switching the belt too much.
Yeah.
Had Rock just won it at WrestleMania in the traditional sense.
Right.
Maybe I can see Benoit going there and you doing a rematch at SummerSlam.
It was that odd thing with Shane managing Benoit.
They're just friends.
The homoerotic. Yeah, we're just friends.
Yes, I understand why that storyline started when they refused service at a Chick-fil-A. I understand. I understand. But so there were some, you're right, there was everyone remembers that period with this great reverence, but there were some mistakes being made. But and then I would have done it had Rock won it in a traditional. Again, we're doing a lot of fantasy booking here, and I don't really like to do that. But God, in retrospect, it seems like they made some mistakes.
Well, we're pointing out where they went off the tracks here because
had Rock won the title. Pardon me, I didn't mean to interrupt. When the Rock, if he wins the title in a traditional sense at WrestleMania, and holds it till and he's the champion still in July, maybe have Benoit beat him and then win the belt, and then they just do a quick rematch at SummerSlam. Although. Given the way, and I know that, you know, Benoit, you know, is obviously a piece of trash now that no one is a piece of human filth, and we are never to look at him with reverence again, but having had never won the title before in his career, and the whole being held down, even WCW, going back to WCW and then WWF for 4 years, made the win at WrestleMania 20 so much more special. That's another, I know that's hindsight, but I kind of like didn't think Benoit was ready in 2000 to be WWF champion.
Well,
me personally, he was a worthy challenger to The Rock, but I don't think people were as accepting of him as champion in 2000 as they were in 2004. So, but the other two, well, let's bring it back, regain focus, Kyle. The other two, with Triple H going over Jericho and Undertaker burying Angle.
Yeah.
I thought were inexcusable decisions that Fully Loaded in Dallas, Texas.
They really were. And, you know, you've got Benoit and Jericho, each of whom had gotten their bloodied scalps going slightly through that glass ceiling, firmly shoved back below it at SummerSlam as they were wrestling one another.
In a 2 out of 3 falls match that was a fine match.
It's a work rate showcase, but it's almost WCW-rific in terms of, oh, okay.
Oh, you two go and have the match of the night. But.
Yeah. The adults over here at the big table are going to have the storylines. You kids at the card table go entertain the smart
marks. And they
did
like a 2 out of 3 falls match. It just seemed rushed. There are some people who really, really, really dig this match between Benoit and Jericho. They've had better.
Well, there's a match.
And then guess what? Guess who gets paired up? I mean, see, it's so funny. It seemed like they just quit on pushing new guys around this period.
They did.
Because then they go with Undertaker-Kane Part 72.
Undertaker-Kane, that was weird how that ended up restarting as it has on and off, you know, up until the year 2011, actually, I guess. But
jeez, how nauseous.
2010. But as far as history goes, it was the second part of a trilogy between the very excellent tag teams of Edge and Christian, Hardys and Dudleys. You go from, what was it, WrestleMania 2000.
Which was technically just a tables and ladders match.
Yeah, that one, this is the first ever TLC match, tables, ladders, and chairs, and then subsequently you get the third part of the trilogy the next year, which WrestleMania was, 17.
Which is called TLC 2.
TLC 2,
but
yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Let's talk about some good stuff that was done perfectly here.
Mm-hmm.
I have this rated as the best match in SummerSlam history.
Okay.
This the TLC match.
Wow, even over Test Taker. Okay.
You ought to be ashamed of yourself. But this is the best. Now, one minor little quibble, though. There are a lot of people. This was in North Carolina, if you remember this particular show. I think it was in Raleigh, maybe?
I think so, yeah.
A lot of people were clamoring for the Hardys to get their big win here because they were the clear babyface team. That doesn't bother me as much. I have this rated not only as the best SummerSlam match, this should have a number two match of the decade,
okay,
by the way, if you're really keeping score at home, if you really got your Kyle Ross stat sheet out. it was the best match. It's a wonderful match, and it's the first match where the storyline necessarily didn't matter so much. It was kind of a stunt show,
yeah,
and you just sort of, in the like kind of Ring of Honor sense, you're not really rooting for a character. You just kind of want the match. Because I remember watching this, I just didn't want the match to end.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So it kind of fit that Edge and Christian won because you didn't want the match to end and the heel team wins.
Right.
So, and they were so over. I mean, they were such a great team, Edge and Christian, during this time period that it was okay, and the Hardys wound up winning it anyway, so down the road. So.
It was amazing. I mean, if you gave these guys plunder, even in the matches without plunder, a lot of times it was great, but excellent stuff with them. Some other interesting things on the card here, too. A final iteration of Fallout from DX, X-Pac, and Road Dogg. You had RTC and Too Cool, which was kind of indicative of what was happening in the era. China and Eddie against Val and Trish in an Intercontinental title match. It would seem kind of Russo-rific.
Remember what we talked about in our 98. Here's what's funny. 98, we talked about that being 11:59 for the Intercontinental title.
Yeah.
We didn't even reference the belt in 99. And here, I don't even remember what was going on. I don't know who was the champion and who came out the champion.
This is 12:15 of the next day. Well, I think this is where China won it, actually. I think because China and Eddie were on the winning end. This might have been where she won the belt and then was going up against Jarrett.
That was 99. But she did win it in this period.
She won it again?
Yes, I think she wins in this match. Time had passed.
Didn't mean anything.
I hated that.
Waller Taz was another one on here, Battle of the Commentators.
Where they didn't, and they jobbed Taz.
Yeah, yeah.
They jobbed Taz, remember that? Oh,
yeah.
God.
Survive if I let you. Not so much. And Shane McMahon, taking care of backstage, one of his real pet projects in the company, never went anywhere, dropping a hardcore match to Steve Blackman.
Remember, he did the huge
jump. That was like
jump.
His project, yeah. He was always going to be the guy to get Steve Blackman over. God bless him, it never worked.
You know what's funny? We've been pretty negative in our discussion on this show. This was the best SummerSlam ever when it happened, I thought.
When it happened, yeah.
It was. It certainly ranks for me in the top. To be honest, I would have this SummerSlam ranked as the second best SummerSlam of all time.
The one thing I want to say, too, and where I...
There's a lot of good in-ring work on it that saves it. It's just like, God, when you look back at it,
well, certainly,
it's a lot of missed opportunities.
You're certainly not speaking of the Cat Terry stink face match when you talk about the great work rate. But a brief note on Shane McMahon, and I think why justifiably so. He hasn't gotten the vitriol that a lot of his other family members have gotten from the IWC. Because whether or not he picks out the right guy or not, I like the notion of the son of the owner of the company sees somebody in the locker room and says, I want to try and make a star out of that guy. I'm going to set up a program out there and go and kill myself to try to get this guy over. I like that. I like that Shane McMahon is willing to do that. Did he pick the right guy? Evidently not. But that's tremendous that he did that.
Yeah, you know, because he probably looks at himself and he's like, you know, I'm pretty lucky to be where I'm at. You know, I'm the boss's son. Since I don't work on a, because people around this period took umbrage with this, that because Shane wasn't working a regular schedule,
he would work the matches nobody could keep up with.
Yeah, he would basically just go all out, and he could do things like jump off the Titantron and do these silly things that a regular worker probably would be afraid to do for fear of getting injured.
Right.
But you know, let's look at the glass half full. He was trying to get Steve Blackman over. It's just that Steve Blackman was the black hole of charisma.
Yeah, exactly. I like that. I just wanted to say for a minute how much I respect that. So, yeah, this was
Shane McMahon did a lot more than for Steve Blackman's career than your boy Al Snow did.
My boy Al Snow. Definitely got to hook up the Al Snow-Kyle rematch on the show here one of these days. So then when you're looking at SummerSlam 01, Kyle, next one here in 3B of our anthology, You really have to go and start to take a look. WrestleMania 17 was not quite like the resets that WCW was doing in ruinous sense their last 2 years of the company from the first Russo period on down. But it was a real kind of a soft reset from WrestleMania time forward as Steve Austin goes heel and starts that chapter with McMahon. You've got a short-lived alliance with Triple H before he ends up going on the sidelines, and you've got the start of what becomes the full-fledged invasion of WCW and ECW, even if it's in name only, over the summer. You've got a point in time here, and when people point to the end of the boom period there and really starting at WrestleMania 17, a lot of people point to Austin's heel turn and how ill-advised it was under the circumstances. But a lot of Attitude Era storylines were being put aside at that point in time in favor of various new directions, and these new directions consumed SummerSlam in the form of the invasion.
I would agree with that. I mean, certainly people can hear us debate WrestleMania 3 versus the merits of that show versus WrestleMania 17, which is better by listening to our WrestleMania anthology. I personally believe I'm against the grain. I believe WrestleMania 3 is the better show, simply because while in-ring top to bottom it may not be as good, it is a celebration of the one boom period, where WrestleMania 17 is a clear end of the celebration.
Punctuation.
Yeah. The punctuation mark, I'm not sure what you call it, but it's not a good one, I don't
think. An exclamation fart?
Yes. Yeah. But the Austin heel, all right, look, everyone knows by now, let's just kind of set the table here, as we've been doing for all these SummerSlams here.
Yep.
We don't need to spend a lot of time on these things because they've been discussed a lot in many forums, us included. The Austin heel turn was a dumb idea. Everyone agrees on that now.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Austin agrees on it now. He said it on his recent DVD. He's like, you know, it was his idea. He takes full blame for it. But he's like, you know, in retrospect, I should have just stunned McMahon, and that would have been weird. But for him, it would have been okay. But look. Here was the interesting thing. They had so much going on. It would have been crazy to be in the book, and then they don't really. It was creative team, I think, by that point, not booking office.
Yeah.
But what happened? Because you have to go a little bit before WrestleMania 17 to understand SummerSlam, in that you have Vince McMahon's purchase of WCW.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such huge news. And remember, I remember leading up to WrestleMania 17, I know that was the so-called peak and the end simultaneously of the Attitude Era.
Right.
But I thought, you know, and we've been talking about some of the, you know, some of the little missteps here and there adding up in the last two SummerSlams, despite both of those shows being very good and very successful business-wise, I had kind of become a little agitated, I remember, in the spring of 2001, Ricky, at some of the creative directions, at the guys like the Benoits and the Jerichos being held down. You know, I mean, people don't look down on me because I said Benoit. At the time, there were a lot of people upset about that.
You didn't
know
he was a murderous SOB.
Yeah, yes. So I remember getting kind of irritated, and it just seemed like there was the glass ceiling, now that they had dominated WCW and then eventually just run them out of business, or WCW ran themselves out of business, had been established. There was a glass ceiling. You know, there was the Austin, Rock, Undertaker, Triple H, whoever else group. And then
they were repeating the mistakes of the company that they had beaten.
And then you kind of had, you know, your Jericho, Angle, Benoit level, whatever. We don't need to rehash all this. But so McMahon buys WCW. It was such a big story. Everyone knew about it. As much as wrestling can be front page news, you could argue that was the biggest story ever in the history of the business, WWF buying WCW.
And they were already very front and center because that was the spring of the XFL. So they were getting a fair amount of mainstream attention for that as well.
Sure.
Not in a good way, but mainstream attention.
I mean, they had that one good week. But
love that Rusty Tillman storyline.
Yes. Well, maybe. Too bad ESPN wasn't around for the XFL. They would have got it over. But here's the thing with the invasion. This is my story. They just rushed everything and weren't thinking clearly. It's tough because they were caught up. Business was so good. They thought they were the Teflon. Vince thought he was the Teflon Don. They were invincible. Ah, you know, I make this. Oh, who cares if a bunch of people on the internet thought Chris Jericho should have won a last man standing match in Dallas, Texas in July 2000. I'm making money hand over fist. I'm public. We're public trading company. I'm rich. Who gives a damn about any of that stuff?
Well, with the risque direction of the Attitude Era, they were making hand over jerking fist.
Yes, there we go. Yes. Okay. But here's the thing. I just think they rushed everything. And I think that's really key when we start talking about SummerSlam 2001. They rushed everything. They wanted to address the purchase of WCW.
Yeah.
So what's the first thing they do? They do that storyline, which everyone remembers, and they speak about it usually with great reverence, where Shane comes out on Nitro and announces in storyline that he is the owner of WCW. While I agree that they needed to address the purchase somehow, and that storyline, if you remember, tied in very well to the Vince-Shane match at WrestleMania. It worked for that.
Yes.
But here's where they were being very nearsighted. I think nearsighted. I don't know if they're nearsighted or farsighted, but they were wrong. Okay? That the crowd eventually was not going to cheer for a babyface WCW against a heel WWF. You know,
right.
Vince was representing WWF and Vince was this huge heel. And I don't think they thought of it, and then they got to that where, okay, Shane wins the big blow-off, as he should have. It's a great – it's probably the best non-wrestler match ever, Shane beating Vince at WrestleMania 17.
With the Van Terminator, no less.
And they get to the point where it's, okay, well, we're going to start pushing Shane McMahon's WCW, and Shane's his babyface. And logistically, it became a nightmare because people didn't want to – WCW – and we're going to get to this big time in this podcast. They've never done outsider angles properly in the history of the company, even going to Brock Lesnar this past April 2012, if you're listening to this podcast in 2020. Mm-hmm. But those guys, the active WCW roster when that company went out of business, was not a strong roster.
Right.
It wasn't. And the WWF fans didn't want to cheer those people.
Right.
So they ran into an issue where, okay, well, now we've got to make this decision. And then you just started seeing them in the summer of 2001 speed through things. I mean, just light, because they're like, oh, God, we need to rectify this. And rather than making subtle decisions, they were making – you talk about resets.
Yeah.
How you open, I mean, they were making wild decisions. Do you remember some of those Raws in the summer of 2001?
Yeah.
You know, they – had kind of done this thing, you know, Austin was the heel coming out of WrestleMania. Undertaker Kane challenging Austin, Triple H at Backlash, did disastrous business.
Mm-hmm.
Disastrous business, okay. They kind of then went in the direction, they kind of panicked, like, oh my God. Now, they didn't realize that because it was a horrible decision to turn Austin heel. They go in a different direction with Benoit and Jericho the next month, remember. And for a couple weeks, that was red hot. Best match in the history of Raw is Benoit and Jericho beating Austin and Triple H for the tag titles. I believe it's in San Jose in May.
How come they didn't show that one on Raw 1000?
Well,
Yeah.
But I actually named it best match of the decade. If you remember, in SummerSlam 2000, I said the TLC match was the second best match of the decade.
Mm-hmm.
Now I've revealed what number one is.
Wow.
Okay. I just thought, I remember being so into that and really like being Mark City.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the invasion comes in, and Benoit was hurt, so you got to get rid of him. And not to get all fantasy booking again, but here's the thing. Here's where they erred. You talk about they were pig-headed in some regards and too quick to give up in others. They were clearly too pig-headed with the Austin heel turn.
Right.
It was obvious early on that was a bad move. There's no way any of the concerned parties didn't realize, like, oh, God, we have made a terrible decision. The invasion, Ricky, and I'm going to stop babbling and give you a chance to speak. The invasion, when they started, you know, DDP came on as the Undertaker stalker. Booker T shows up. And here's where logistically there were problems. Booker T kind of showed up doing a babyface, attacking the heel Austin in this King of the Ring title match against Benoit and Jericho. Remember
right,
that?
Right, right.
And that kind of made no sense. The invasion allowed them, I think, to wash their hands of the Austin heel turn. And instead,
they doubled
they
down.
Married the two storylines and had Austin be kind of their Hollywood Hogan.
Yeah.
But the problem was Austin was a WWF guy. And it wasn't like the reason Hogan worked so well in that NWO storyline back in 1986 is the WCW fan base didn't ever take to him. And so he came across as a good invading outsider.
Right.
I thought, personally, and this is just a thing I'm going to throw out and we can just move on, that remember the night of King of the Ring they started doing this storyline? There's a rumor that Jericho or Benoit have sold out to Shane McMahon's WCW.
Yeah.
And they were playing up their past history. Well, with Benoit to go on the shelf soon and Austin clearly needing not to be a heel, I thought they could have gotten out of this by doing the, well, I guess this goes back to 96, Tony Schiavone storyline. I guess this goes back to 99. They could have done it with Jericho, I think, as
a
the
double
lead.
Turn? Okay.
Because that made Jericho and Benoit, that storyline, whether they intended to or not, look really bad and weak. Because, again, it's like, okay, you know, people already didn't like WCW, and they're saying Jericho and Benoit, the two babyface, first of all, two babyface challengers against a heel champion in a triple threat match is stupid.
Right.
So that's a logistical nightmare. But after all that, and I promise I'll stop talking here, they do the Invasion pay-per-view, the biggest money non-WrestleMania pay-per-view they've ever done. And that's where Austin becomes married to the Alliance.
Yep.
We haven't even mentioned the ECW rebirth and joining with WCW that they sped through, which was like they could have gotten months out of that. They did it in 2 hours.
Yep.
And you roll the SummerSlam with obviously a lot of big names. You have a lot of good matches. But logistically, I can't keep harping on this enough, you had some errors, and it just set the tone for this whole stinking angle to be the biggest letdown in the history of this industry.
It really was. And I was at Invasion, and I've spoken of that. Watching all the rube mouth breather fans were just cheering anything WWF, no matter what. I mean,
They should have. See, here's the thing. You can't tell people, oh, you're not smart enough. If that's what the most people want, I don't know.
I think it's more so how they were expressing it. We're going to cheer for you. Our guys beat these here outsider folks.
Well, that's what they... It's
more
you
so
need
I'm
those
just
people.
I'm just judging them on how they talk rather than what their point of
gotcha,
view is.
But you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
They. I interrupted.
I hear what you're saying because you're talking about. I mean, I tend to agree with that. Fans are going to identify with their own promotion and that they were kind of screwed up. And what they tried to do to get back on track was they were doubling down on a bad idea by putting Austin at the helm of this thing. I get that. I understand that. And it's a thing where, you know, we've talked about off air, and I think probably in some previous ones here, and bemoaned the fact that they didn't have any kind of real star power that had come over from WCW for the most
part.
Which
is why they had to do the Austin thing, because they're like, okay, we've got to get this group up to snuff. On the heel side, we need to have one of our stars turn. Jericho would have been better. Well, the main problem was, I think, is they just rushed into this damn thing.
Two problems that I see. One, and we talked about this just briefly, but the whole thing of, oh, hey, Austin is a heel. Hogan was pretty hot as a heel. Hogan was hot as a heel after he had been booed like a war criminal for 2 years as a quote-unquote babyface.
Yes.
Steve Austin was a red-hot babyface
turned. I mean, he was being cheered like a madman when he did the heel turn.
Yeah, and now actually, I guess I have three elements to that. Number two is, and I know I've talked about this one before, Austin selfishly still wanting to sell merch, and I can't blame him for that. If you're going to be the corporate champion, then be the corporate champion. Don't walk out there with your Fock Fear t-shirts and everything like that and still wearing your jorts and still having the glass breaking. And
well, they
because the fans, will like Pavlov's dog, will still cheer you no matter what.
They were going to be the corporate champion. You're right. They did make some – remember they changed his music a little bit?
A little bit.
But it was still kind of cool.
A little bit.
I mean, it wasn't as good, but it was still like kind of like a heart-rocking song.
But like, you know, McMahon in 98, at the dawn of the McMahon-Austin feud, McMahon wanted him to become the corporate champion. You know, where are your Gucci's, Mr. Austin?
Yeah, I love that line.
Okay. So why was McMahon not still –
he should have finally said – I mean, he could have been a little wink-wink to the smart marks.
Yeah.
He could have been like, Mr. McMahon, I finally bought those Gucci shoes.
Thank you. That's what I'm talking about. But here's the other thing, too. In terms of him leading WCW, the real problem with that – okay, you're going to have Hollywood Hogan leading the NWO. The NWO was made of whole cloth. The NWO was whatever they made it at its formation with Hall, Nash, and then Hogan, and then going forward, versus WCW, which had existed in one form or another for a very long time in the other place, and you're putting Austin in charge of it. Do you understand what I'm saying about the distinction?
Yeah,
Hogan led something new. Austin led an established brand that couldn't have been less associated with him.
Agreed. And the whole moral of this story is just logistical errors. And I think there's no better symbol of that than the world title match at SummerSlam 2001,
yes,
which is Steve Austin versus Kurt Angle.
Mm-hmm.
This is so indicative of 2001. It's two very good performers.
Yeah.
It's a great match. I could argue that this is near the very top, if not at the top, of best matches in company history with a non-finish.
Mm-hmm.
They do a double DQ because Austin just keeps like beating up refs to save the title.
Yeah.
This is a, I mean, he just takes all these bumps despite being having that bad neck. And but the thing is, it was a babyface Kurt Angle, and he did a good job against a heel Steve Austin.
Mm-hmm.
To his credit, did a good job.
Yeah.
But it just didn't feel right. Think about that. It was this wonderful match, but it just felt like both guys were still being miscast.
But that's how great, that's how talented they both are.
Yes,
each of them in a role against the grain went out there and produced a match the caliber of what you described.
Yes, and that's the thing. I think it's a credit to the performers,
yes,
to succeed in spite of the promotion.
Yes.
Which is how they got away with so many things. They got around these missteps in 2000, 2001, and then into 2002 because the quality of performer they had was so much greater than, like, say, today when they have
sure
a misstep and it's just like, oh, God, like, you just screwed yourself for 4 months.
Well, you had that, and then you had, this is the first of any of the pay-per-views, and we've seen this ever since in the company. Well, for a period of time in 2002, there was the Unified title. But from this show forward, it would be two world titles on a show. In this case, it was the WCW world title, or as they called it at the time, the WCW title. Nothing like diminishing the caliber of something you just purchased by taking world out of the title. Booker T coming in defending against The Rock winning it here in his return to the WWF.
Which also, again,
yeah,
to catch up, that felt rushed.
That did.
I mean, Booker T was kind of, certainly moving forward, he wasn't by any means, you know, there were some people who thought like he was at The Rock's level at that point. I can't sign off on that viewpoint. I'm sorry.
I did think he was one of the brightest lights in WCW, even with the big boys that we mentioned weren't there. But yeah, he wasn't at The Rock's level.
Of the guys they had to work with, the holdovers from the active WCW roster,
top two or three,
he was clearly moving forward, I think, the best piece they had.
Yeah.
And this, right off the bat, stamped him as, well, you know, there's a reason we didn't have him before.
But by the same token, I mean, I thought
just having that match at that time was a bad idea.
It was.
The WCW needed to come out of this show dominant. Like, remember the NWO? Every freaking show in 96 and 97, it got so repetitive, but it's still, like, they came out ahead for the most part with some notable exceptions. And this, yeah, okay, Austin was still the champion, but it just didn't feel like a strong heel group. It almost felt like, well, I guess they do stink. There was all top down the card. The only guys on the WCW side that succeeded on this show were guys that had been moved over from the WWF side, like X-Pac and Test and Austin.
I'm going to connect all the dots that we've made thus far here and end up forming a Mona Lisa out of that, because here's what I'm seeing. When you talk about the changes of direction and the hot-shotting over the summer and everything like that, they were screwed by when SummerSlam was on the calendar. Because here's the thing. Had it been another couple months down the road, you could have had Austin do that job to Angle. He subsequently jobbed the belt to him short-term, but you couldn't do it just a month after the invasion. You couldn't have Booker T go over The Rock right after The Rock had just returned, and yet The Rock had to fight somebody big from the WCW side, and as you pointed out, if it wasn't Booker T, who was it going to be? The consequence of their hot-shotting over the summer was that they woke up one day and Stanford were like, oh, crap, SummerSlam's in 3 weeks. And they had to go in these directions and do these things here. And you could, the real answer probably would have been, I mean, the better answer would have been to transverse the results here. Maybe Booker T gets a cheap win over The Rock, but Angle gets the feel-good win at the end of the night over Austin, but you couldn't do that just a month after the invasion of having The Rock chasing, or having, I'm sorry, Austin chasing Angle. So they were kind of screwed by that.
See, I think it goes back, you talked about it, the problem was the doubling down of the Austin heel turn with this.
Yep.
You're right, because they put themselves in a – had they – I don't know. This, again, gets into, like, fantasy booking. I talked about what if you had Jericho be the initial – I guess this goes back to 99, folks.
Yeah.
What if you had the – like, he would have won the title of King of the Ring – Austin's back as a babyface. I don't know. They wrestle in Jericho. I don't know. I mean, you can come with a million. Everyone comes up with their own million different concepts. It just seems that, like, anything else but what they did would have been better.
I think so.
Because, it's incredibly, they had this wonderful storyline that seemed to be it was going to be the greatest of all time, remember? And 3 months later, it was over, Ricky.
You talk about other. Well, that's
and
because.
And they didn't even introduce the big stars. Now, granted, there were some. Again. Some contractual situations. They didn't even get Goldberg until 2003.
Goldberg, Scott Steiner, Hogan, The Outsiders, Flair, and I'm probably forgetting one or two. They all came in afterwards. Not Sting, but just about all the rest of them. It really was the WCW versus WWF war in name only, and that's one of the reasons that it fell apart.
Got some dream matches out of the situation. I think that's the legacy of basically him, McMahon, buying WCW. You got Rock Hogan. You know, stuff like that.
Yeah, which actually came after all of this.
Yeah.
One of the only other names of any significance here, and it just shows you, since he was one of the biggest names with all the other ones left on the sidelines, DDP tagging up with Canyon.
Just buried unmercifully.
Yeah, by Taker and Kane, unification match of the tag team titles from different companies.
See, here's the thing. DDP, was he a guy like that I'm saying should have come in and start giving the diamond cutter to every WWF star and beating them? I'm not saying that, man, but he was at least one of the like decent pieces they had.
Get the value out of him. Yeah. Get the value.
Something.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they just made him and Booker T, who were basically the two, I think, bigger name guys on this show, look like fools. I will say one guy that did get himself over on the show was even more so on that invasion show in Cleveland that you referenced was RVD.
Yeah, yeah.
RVD was kind of it was kind of interesting that it was an ECW guy that really was the one who elevated himself on the heel side.
Hardcore ladder match. He defeats Jeff Hardy at SummerSlam for the hardcore title. I mentioned to you off air, there was a guy here where I thought it was counterproductive that he did a job. Now, he ended up getting hurt shortly thereafter anyway, so you could look at it like, okay. But I'm looking at it from the point of view of you don't know the guy who's going to get hurt. You should try to get something out of him. Rhino, who was a very dominant ECW champion towards the tail end of that run there, who in true WWF fashion came in as just another guy and was treated that way throughout. But now you got the invasion going. Now being, dominant ECW champion at the end should end up meaning something. And you got him in there with Chris Jericho, and he's just doing the job. Couldn't Jericho have gone over somebody else?
Yeah, that was weird because Jericho had lost. It's funny.
I would have had Rhino start carrying around the ECW title again.
Well, it goes back to all the Rush stuff. But here's the thing. Jericho had kind of worn out his. This is also, and again, when I say these things, I have like 10 years of hindsight, which isn't fair to them at the time, but. Jericho kind of worn out his welcome, I think, as a babyface, believe it or not. When he was kind of getting a little cold as a babyface. And he, in fact, winds up turning heel and becoming the champion anyway after they ditch this invasion angle.
Right.
So to me, I thought they could have got maximized value with him on the heel side. You're right. He wasn't doing anything at this period. This was kind of an extension of the old Jericho-Stephanie storyline. I remember Stephanie's in Rhino's corner in this match. And yeah, it was just another example of, look, hey, you can build a here's a new guy you can build, but everyone complains about us not giving Jericho, so we'll doubly screw it up and have Jericho beat this guy, even though you're right. I mean, that's just a lot of errors.
Seems kind of weak. The other thing with Jericho too, what they ended up doing as the invasion was losing steam and everybody could see that the WWF side was being booked stronger, rather than actually allowing the invasion alliance side to get any heat, they did a thing in the fall of where Jericho and The Rock were at odds for the WCW title, so that, could be some dissension from within on the WWF ranks, yeah, as though that's the only way they can be beaten, is if two of their top guys are distracted.
And that was a wonderful storyline.
It was.
It was a wonderful storyline.
It was.
But
I would have preferred that, you know, the heat come from the other side.
Yeah, I mean, well, yeah, like you know, said, but they didn't have a lot of good stuff yet, and it was compounded by a lot of rushing and poor decision-making. I will say this, though. I think this is the third straight SummerSlam we've talked about where we've been largely negative and critical of the booking. It is overall, though, if you just watch the show, it is a very good SummerSlam. I don't believe it's as good as 2000. It is not as good as 2002, which we'll talk about next. That is the best SummerSlam of all time, in my opinion, as you mentioned, I believe, way back when we started part three here of our anthology.
Yep.
And but overall, it's a top tier. It's a top five SummerSlam, 2001.
Last one to ask you about here, too. Two matches.
Oh, okay,
I'm guessing they were pretty good. X-Pac and Tajiri unifying the cruiserweight and light heavyweight titles?
Disappointing again.
Disappointing?
Again, look who goes over on it. Look who does get over on the heel side. A guy who'd been moved over. And X-Pac wasn't even, he was like a heel WWF guy.
Yeah.
Weird
psychology.
And Tajiri was really over. That pissed me off at the time, actually. I actually just downright got mad.
How about Edge and Storm for the IC?
That was good. That was a good match, but again, they cut the legs out. Again, Lance Storm was a guy they could have got mileage, one of the few guys they could have got mileage out of on the heel side, and they beat him relatively quick here.
Instead, they go to the boring shtick with him eventually. Yeah, great move, WWF. But, all right, that's our look then at SummerSlam.
That was actually Edge's best match at the time, single match.
It was. You know, better things were to come from Edge, and the next year, some great work rate from certainly.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.